once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, and wherever else this broadcast is being picked up tonight. My name's the V-Man, and on the show tonight, we'll be speaking with Israeli Jewish feminist peace activist Pnina Firestone. She'll be joining me by telephone to discuss the Israeli peace movement. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming your way next here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Israeli Jewish feminist peace activist Pnina Firestone is one of the key Jewish organizers of Women in Black, the Women's Coalition for a Just Peace, and New Profile, the feminist movement to civilize Israeli society. 10 Israeli women's groups make up the Coalition of Women for a Just Peace, a mix of Jewish and Palestinian women, all citizens of Israel, who call upon the State of Israel to end the occupation of to end the occupation and negotiate a just solution. Stricken two decades ago by a debilitating case of rheumatoid arthritis, Pnina Firestone considered ending her life. Instead, the wheelchair-bound Israeli grandmother has mutated her frustrations into an enduring commitment to work for a peaceful resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Pnina Firestone joins me now by telephone. I want to welcome you to the program, Pnina.
Hi.
It's good to have you with us today.
Good to be with you.
Let's just get right into it. The American Heritage Dictionary defines Zionism as a Jewish movement that arose in the late 19th century in response to growing anti-Semitism and sought to reestablish a Jewish homeland in Palestine. Modern Zionism is concerned with the support and development of the State of Israel. What do you think of this definition of the American Heritage Dictionary, and how do you define Zionism? What does it mean to you?
Well, I adhere to the definition that you found in the dictionary. The problem is that today people abuse the term and use it for their own means, which is exactly opposite to what Zionism is all about. Zionism wanted a safe haven for Jews somewhere in the world. Now, Israel turned out to be the most dangerous place for Jews. And Israel actually endangers Jews all over the world by the acts of the occupation and what it entails. So when people talk today about Zionism being occupying and whatnot, it's exactly opposite to what Zionism is actually stands for.
Over the summer, you wrote an essay titled A Zionist's Petition for Peace, and you wrote, quote, "For a long time now, religious Zionism has been experiencing a profound crisis. All of its religious thinking and most of its agenda revolve around one issue only, namely the struggle for the territories of Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip. It is on the altar of this struggle that the movement is sacrificing what should have been central and unique to its being, the effort to conduct a Jewish life in the actual reality of the Jewish state." Can you expand on some of these thoughts for our listeners?
Yes, of course. Well, I'd go even beyond it. What I feel is that there are some people who take advantage of the majority of people. I will start with the Prime Minister Sharon. He wants to rule. And he knows that so long as Israel is in the occupied territories, there's going to be land and water, the stealing of land and water from the Arabs. And the war is going to go on, and nobody will look into what the government is doing. And we have now the worst government ever, and life in Israel is just collapsing, and people are scared because we are all scared that, you know, there are also leaders on the Arab side that threaten to throw the Jews in threatened to throw the Jews into the sea. And people, when they're afraid, start to believe in ideas that have nothing to do with reality. And that's how it came about, that to be a Zionist in their eyes is to occupy and to do the most awful deeds one can think of, and to have an apartheid state in the state of Israel. But it's not Zionism and it's not Judaism. It's just the need, the urge to rule, the drive, the government, and the people who are so scared follow this, the lead of these people.
On November 29th, an article titled "Anti-Zionism is Anti-Semitism" appeared in the British newspaper The Guardian. The piece was written by Emmanuel Ottolenghi. The piece begins, "Is there a link between the way Israel's case is presented and anti-Semitism?" I'd like to pose that very question to you, Penina Firestone. Is there a link between the way Israel's case is presented and anti-Semitism?
I don't think so. I think that anti-Semitism is rising now because the acts, the very acts that the army is carrying out in the name of the Israelis, but it's in the name of the rulers of the country, and this brings about the rise of anti-Israeli deeds. I don't believe it's really anti-Semitism. I think there is all over the world, after World War II, it was not bon ton to be anti-Semitic. The hatred to the strangers was turned over to all the strangers in the world. I mean, all the Turks living in Germany, etc. But nowadays, the hatred to the deeds that the Israeli government is carrying out, people in Israel want to identify it with anti-Semitism, thus making people in Israel more scared and more turned within instead of really handling the problem that we're occupiers and that it's anti-occupation and not anti-Semitic, what people feel all around the world. We just.
You referred to the occupation of the Palestinian territories as an apartheid situation.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about this? What leads you to believe that it is an apartheid situation there?
Well, to begin with, those people live in enclosures. Sometimes they cannot leave from one village and go to the other village. Sometimes even within one village now with the separation wall. There are roads that cut through the territories in which Arabs, Palestinians are not allowed to ride. Only Israeli citizens have access to these roads. Not to speak of work, they have no, in the territories, there are no health services. The education is really unbelievably destroyed by the Israelis. What else do you need? They have no work, no livelihood. There's an organization called Ta'ayush of Jews and Palestinian, Israeli Arabs, Israeli Palestinians, as they prefer to be called, going every weekend to other places in the territories, just bringing food and clothing, because they are left without anything, to speak of food, clothing, medical care, you just name it.
But there are those who would argue that these extreme measures on the part of the Israeli government is to prevent terrorism. Is that accurate?
You know how many times the government declared that they destroyed the basis of terrorism? Let me tell you, I live in Jerusalem, as you said before, and near a main street with a lot of stores there, and most people there are right-wing people. 2 weeks ago, I went into a store and the man told me, "What do you think? I do not know that after each targeted killing which Israel carries out, there's a terror attack. I know it. So people know it. It's very clear that Sharon sends the army to carry out these targeted killings, and it provokes actually terrorism. And this all the time keeps him in power, because he can tell people, you see, this is what they do to us. They do not care about young and old, children, women. But he really, whenever there was a lull in terror activities, Sharon again sent someone to carry out targeted killing, and again there was a terror attack. Whatever Israel does today augments terrorism, not deters it. There has never been such a bad period in Israel as it is today, after we see the whole army is in the territories. We occupy every, I do not want to say we because I'm against it, but the army occupies every and each village in the territories, but you cannot stop one man carrying a belt, a bomb on his body, from coming into the some center in Israel and exploding himself. You see, people in the territories are so scared. They are so hopeless. People who were used to provide for their families cannot do it. So when they lose all hope, so what remains for them to do is to put on a belt with a bomb in it and come to a center in Israel and explode and take with him 20, 30, sometimes only 5 or a busload of people. The army only augments the acts of terror. It doesn't put an end to it. It doesn't stop it.
What impact does the Israeli army's activities in the occupied territories have on Israeli society, on civil society within Israel? I think we hear on Free Radio Santa Cruz, we hear a lot about what is going on in the occupied territories, but little about Israel itself. So can you give us some sense of what the impact of the military has on everyday life there?
I'm very happy you asked this question, because the Israeli society is deteriorating daily. You know, when young kids, don't forget that it's 18-year-old that stand in the checkpoints that carry out the war. When they are taught to be cruel, when they take off uniform, they come back and they are cruel also within. Domestic violence has risen fivefold, tenfold, I have no idea how many times. And driving in Israel is a hazard no one wants to take. And the quality of life in Israel has deteriorated to such an extent that my daughter, who lives in Berkeley, cannot come to Israel because she cannot stand the aggression that is in daily life everywhere in the streets. Now, in addition, as soon as the Intifada, this outbreak, started, tourism stopped from one day to another. And with it, so many people became unemployed. And, you know, it's like a chain. When so many people become unemployed, businesses stop having business. And they close down, so factories close down, etc. And unemployment is rising by the hour. And we have this awful government, and there are cuts now in all the social benefits, and everything is, you know, justified. We have a war, we have to to spend so much on war, and actually there are cuts in education, in health, in every civil field, in every civil interest that people need. Everywhere there are cuts, cutbacks, and I don't know where it leads us. I really have no idea. If someone really has the future of the state of Israel close to his heart, he should do everything possible to make sure that we don't get the army, the military support from the United States, so we can't go on with this awful war and start to build, to rebuild the Israeli society.
I'm speaking tonight with Pnina Firestone, a feminist, an Israeli feminist peace activist, and she's joining me by telephone here on Free Radio Santa Cruz on Rockin' the Boat. We're about halfway through the time we have, and I want to maybe focus the rest of the time we have together on some solutions to this crisis that has been ongoing for decades now. Military service, as you know, is required of all Israelis. All men and women are conscripted into the military. To date, close to 1,200 IDF, Israeli Defense Force soldiers, have signed on to a letter opposing the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories and have refused to serve there. Pnina Firestone, how big an impact has this Refusnik movement had on getting media attention to this issue and maybe, you know, just, I guess that's the question. How big of an impact has it had?
Well, you probably might know that there are now two court-martials going on in Israel. One court-martial is for a conscientious objector, namely the nephew of Benjamin Netanyahu, who was the prime minister and now is the finance minister in Israel. And he refuses to go to the army on the basis of conscience. He wouldn't go to any army. And the second court-martial is of five young guys who refuse to serve in the army so long as it's an occupying army because conscientiously they cannot serve in such an army. Now, the verdict on the nephew of Netanyahu, Yoni Ben Arzi, was given that he did not follow the rule, the law. He refused to enlist in the army, but the judge recommended that he would be placed again before a conscientious committee. The army has, well, I'll start from the beginning. Israel has signed the fourth Geneva Amendment by which in a democratic country, people can refuse conscription, but they have to serve a civil service in the country. And until last few weeks, in Israel, religious men could refuse to go to the army on the basis of conscience, and women were released from the army on conscientious ground. But men, males, Jewish Israeli males could not be released from the army on this basis. Now, with Yoni's trial going on, some six or seven conscientious objectors were released from the army because the army claims now that real conscientious objectors do not have to serve in the army. But the army claims that the other five are political objectors, and the guys claim they are conscientious objectors. So we have to wait for the verdict, for their verdict to come out, and we'll see what goes on. Now, those two cases attracted a lot of attention in the media, as well as the courage to refuse guys. Those were guys who said they wanted to go to the army, they were ready to serve in the army within the pre-67 war boundaries of Israel. They refused to go to the territories. So this was really dangerous for the army. But this movement has been a bit quieted down, but lately there were some pilots who signed that they would not go on bombarding civilians. And again, the pilots are the core, are the hardcore of the Israeli militarism. And if their cracks began, it's a real danger to the whole setup of militarism in Israel. So there was a big fight against them, and they fought back. We'll see what happens with it. But cracks have started already officially, because before, actually, everybody has to go to the army. The numbers are that only one of two youngsters go to the army. The army doesn't need so many people, and if the young men claimed that on psychological grounds they could not serve in the army released them. So there is a big movement of refusal to go to the army. But with these people who went to court-martial, or the pilots, or a courage to refuse, this is a real danger to the whole system. And I'm much for it, because I want this system to collapse.
The Palestinians have upheld a right of their return for the refugees to their homes, and this has been upheld by international law and UN resolutions. In your view, is the path towards reconciliation the right of return for the Palestinian people?
Well, you know, if you consider, everyone probably knows one or two Palestinians in his neighborhood, and they have families here, they send children to schools. And I do not believe that all of them will pack up and leave everything and come back to Palestine. But the Palestinians need it on a declaratory basis. And this is the means by which the rulers of the State of Israel manage to frighten the Israelis. Here, I don't know how many millions are cited that would like to come back, and they will want your houses, our houses, and they'll throw us into the sea. So here is something which is needed for the Palestinians as a declaration, and is most frightening to the everyday Israeli. So long as people deal with declarations and not with real issues, nothing will move forward.
I just have a couple more questions for you, Penina.
Yeah.
First of which is the role of faith in this conflict. Do you think, or rather, how can Muslims, Jews, and Christians work together to develop a nonviolent approach to this conflict, to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis?
The funny thing is that real religious Muslims, Jews, and Christians cooperate and work together. There are many councils of this kind. The problem is that secular rulers abuse faith for their means and just incite one population against the other, as actually is done also within the Israeli society. You know, the members of the Knesset, our parliament, are on very good terms, religious, non-religious, but everyone incites his voters against the voters of the other. So the people keep on fighting in order, and these rulers do it in order to secure their seats there. It's done all over the world, all over history.
And the role of women in this decades-old conflict, how can women's voices be better represented in the mainstream of Israeli society?
That's the real problem, because Israel is such a militaristic society. The status of women has degraded since the establishment of the State of Israel. Because every general that leaves the army is snapped right away either to a political role or to an economic role, and they engage the most important roles. Now, since all these roles are filled up, all these ex-generals are getting into the education system, because you probably know that the army generals are released at the age of 43, 45, so they are still young, they start a new career, and women are really very backward, have nothing to say. It's a very sad situation. And unless women unite all over the world in order to help one community help the other to overcome all those militaristic rulers, I don't see any future for the whole globe, not just for Israel.
I guess on a final note, what advice would you give to Americans on how we can support the peace movement in Israeli society?
Well, I would like to give an advice to the American Americans to support their interests, and through this they would support the Israeli interests. You know, all the war industry is polluting America, and so much of the taxpayers' money goes to support to carry on the war in Israel. So if people in America will start to look after it, that all the taxes they are paying would go into American interests and not towards the war industry and not towards polluting America, they would help the Americans would help America, and thus they would help also Israel.
So many more questions, but we're quickly running out of time here. So I will just ask you quickly if you could talk about your own transformation. How did you go from being suicidal 20 years ago to, you know, being such a strong advocate for peace?
Well, my grandchildren were born 6 years ago, and, you know, when I got into bed, when I became disabled, and I couldn't provide for myself anymore, and my daughters grew up and they could provide for themselves, so I said, well, I ended my role. But once my grandchildren were born, I realized that my role was not over yet. If my daughters are young mothers, they have to look after my grandchildren, and if I will not try to save the world, my grandchildren will not have a world to live in. Very simple as this. The whole world is polluted. There isn't anywhere in the world potable water, you know, that you can drink. And this is the right of every and each of us. We were all given the water, not a few industrialists who pollute the water. The air is polluted. The oceans are polluted. The Pacific is not as badly polluted as the Atlantic, but the space is a junkyard. There's the growing hole in the ozone. What else do we need? What more alarms do we need in order to stop the catastrophe? So I decided that I'm going to see, to try and do my best that my grandchildren will be able to live in a world that will survive these catastrophes. I'm not so sure today that we have a lot of time to remedy the universe.
I agree. And unfortunately, we are out of time here right now. I've been speaking tonight with Israeli feminist peace activist Penina Firestone. She's joining me by telephone today. And I appreciate your time tonight, Penina Firestone.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's going to wrap it up for us here on Rockin' the Boat. Thanks for listening. Join me again from 5:30 to 6 p.m. each weekday, Monday through Friday, right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101 FM, www.freakradio.org.